I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
Read my lips.
Just send your cash.
There has never been so many lies, so much deception.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Please clap.
It's time for the Mike Madison Show, a new breed of conservative talk. Now, here's your host, Mike Madison.
Showtime! All right, good morning and welcome to the Mike Madison Show here at 103.9 WYAB. I am your host, Mike Madison, providing a safe space for you independent thinkers out there 2 hours a day, 9 to 11 o'clock. Next hour, 10 to 11 o'clock, as usual, we will have Stephen Utroski in from Americans for Prosperity. So there's been a lot of action going on down at the legislature, deadlines looming. We'll see what is making it and what is getting killed. See how free and prosperous Mississippi is poised to be going forward. We actually got some good news coming out of the last year for Mississippi that I want to ask Stephen about as well. Sounds like there's a lot of business creation, small business creation in the state of Mississippi, like an overwhelming amount. So we'll talk about that, see what's going on. Somebody has a birthday today. Today is the, according to the news this morning, today is the first birthday of coronavirus here. It's actually, we don't really know how old coronavirus is. We'd have to ask Dr. Anthony Fauci, you know, the guy who sent millions of dollars to the Wuhan lab to weaponize a coronavirus. We'd have to ask him exactly what the birth date of this virus is. But as far as the weaponized hypochondria that was unleashed on the United States, it's been 1 year since the United States apparently lost its mind and began acting like a scared six-year-old child. It's been 1 year since the miniature Mengele, Dr. Fauci, entered our lives. Doesn't it feel longer than that? Doesn't this guy, I mean, he has been around. He's been skulking behind the scenes for a while, but he's been on our TV screens now for a year. And it was to my great embarrassment that I remember watching him when he first came on, and I said, well, it looks like Trump's got some calm, rational people around him to handle this issue. I don't know why I would ever give anybody behind a Washington, D.C. podium any credit. I should always remember, be suspicious and scornful first, and then change your mind in the opposite direction. It will save a whole lot of time. But anyway, we're 1 year into this thing. One nation-wrecking year. I did a story yesterday on germaphobes. Covered this in my health segment yesterday, where I explained to you that, look, if you try to live in a sterile environment, you're going to end up doing yourself more harm than good. I'm not saying go around and roll around in pig feces or anything like that, but this idea that we can hyper-sterilize ourselves. But this study was reported last night again on the news. It just struck me later after watching that this is going to be very hard to live among you people who are now scared of all germs. They have actually convinced you to be afraid of your fellow human beings. Now, this is, what was it, 46% of people now classify themselves as germaphobes. They are in your head. They have convinced you. They have really psychologically destroyed your lives if that's where you are right now. And I just wonder, how long is it going to be before you people don't freak out at the sound of a sneeze in public? I can't remember the last time I heard a sneeze in public. But I can imagine people will be hitting the decks and be like, drop, what is it? Stop, drop, and roll when you hear a sneeze. People are going to be belly crawling out of a store and they hear us, get low, get low. The coronavirus can't get us down here. You're going to have a very, very hard time for you germaphobes. And I'm speaking to some of you now. If the statistics are right, and the 79% of you who said, well, we think this is a positive trend that people now are more scared of germs than they used to be. To all of you, you're going to have a very, very hard time coping with life going forward, and you are going to be annoying as hell to those of us who are around you. So if you are now a germaphobe, please get help. It's like the people who are afraid to fly. There are support groups for you where they will explain to you the irrational fear that you currently have and hopefully bring you back to some level of sanity. Greg Gutfeld on Fox News yesterday. Greg Gutfeld on Fox News actually said that Trump was ahead of the curve on being a germaphobe. He said, look, Trump was even right about this. He was right before everybody else on being a germaphobe. It was widely known that Donald Trump was a constant user of hand sanitizers, didn't really like to shake hands, these kinds of things. But Greg Gutfeld's giving him credit for this. So what is this, germaphobe? It's now going to become popular? Is that 46%, 42% of people that are now germaphobes? Are they actually trying to mimic President Trump now? This is going to be cool. Look, I'm a germaphobe like Donald Trump. Holy cow. And then the coup de grace yesterday, ABC News was covering hugs. Like the media does, they made this as this heartwarming story. That older people now, fully vaccinated, 2 weeks after their final shot, they can finally hug their grandchildren. When they did several of the tear-jerking episodes of older people embracing a small child. One doctor, they showed the prescription pad where a doctor had written on a pad, "You are now able," or "You are now allowed to hug your grandchildren." And they showed the prescription pad with the doctor's writings on it. And I got to tell you, I found this so wildly pathetic that it was really just to the point of shocking. The fact that older people have been told for a year that their grandchildren are a biohazard is absolutely insane. Older people be more careful, certainly. But if you got a young child who no evidence of any disease or anything, that you kept them at arm's length or behind a plexiglass wall or a window for a year because we were taught to treat our own offspring. And what kind of the love between a grandparent and a grandchild? It's sometimes even greater than that between a parent and a child, because the grandparent can always walk away and leave the child for a while. Take a break. Grandchildren, grandparents being given the green light to hug again seems so wildly, wildly pathetic to me. When we come back, we're going to talk about they passed the stimulus bill. And we knew they were. Markets will love it. The stimmies are going to start hitting Robinhood accounts any day now. It's really quite amazing, but I've got a very profound question. I might just wait till Stephen gets in here, because it's like I need another human being. I've got so many questions. It's like I don't know if I live in the same country and the same world as other people. I've got so many questions, but I've got what I think is a very profound question about the stimulus and any other government spending that is just never, ever talked about. And maybe I just need somebody to explain to me why I'm crazy to even think about it. We'll get to that when we come back.
If you need an experienced lawyer that you can trust, contact the law firm of Danks, Miller & Corey. Our lawyers represent clients and small businesses across Mississippi. With over 100 years of combined legal experience, we have the expertise to handle even the most complex legal matters. When you need a lawyer to fight for you, don't compromise. Call Danks, Miller & Corey. You can reach us at 601-957-3101, 601-957-3101, or online at danksmillercorey.com.
You know, I've largely been an outsider, an observer of the insanity of the past year. I thought it was incredibly sad to see particularly older people or anybody who got sick in the hospital for any reason, cancer, stroke, heart attack, die alone. And just to think that American citizens, the people that they love most, they took government authority, health authorities, and they just accepted the fact that, okay, well, we just need to let them die alone. It's been pretty amazing to watch, actually. It really showed me how either powerful authority is in this country or how weak Americans are. And I'm not really judging anybody who allowed this to happen to a relative, because I haven't had the fight until now. Now, my 90-year-old father has been moved to a rehab facility after having a pacemaker put in. He's 90 years old. My stepmother, who's in her late 70s, is his constant companion and caregiver. They told her that she can't go see him. COVID protocols and all. Now, the strange thing is, they're both vaccinated. mean, that they're still trying to keep them apart. They saw each other yesterday through a glass window talking on their cell phones. My father's 90 years old. He's come out of anesthesia from the surgery. He was very confused and disoriented. But it can't allow his vaccinated. I mean, this is their metric there, right? I thought this was the thing that sets us free. She can't be vaccinated and wear a mask. They can't put her in a hazmat suit or something and allow him. He's got to go into 14 days of quarantine, they say. This is a vaccinated 90-year-old man, confused and doesn't know where he is. He's coming around to that now. I mean, it's probably not as dire as I say, but it really doesn't matter to me. So I'll pass this along to you. A friend of mine up in Nashville, I was talking to, griping about this yesterday when I found out. And she had run into the same thing with one of her relatives, and she said there is a compassionate care clause that you can present to the healthcare workers and pretty much demand that you be allowed access to a loved one in these situations. But yeah, we're gonna try that and see how that works. This is a sickness. I don't care how scared you are of coronavirus. This is a sickness to facilitate a system that separates families from each other. There have been children who have died alone over the past year without their parents around them because of a virus that 99.8% of people survive. I had some people hesitating to give mouth-to-mouth resuscitation to some people. Someone that was at imminent danger of dying, like within 1 minute. And real live human beings, supposedly thinking people, were either instructed not to do it or there was some consideration. Put a towel over their mouth. It wasn't even, the victim of this wasn't even known to be a carrier. The person giving the mouth-to-mouth wasn't known to be a carrier. It's just two human beings, one trying to save the other's life. They interrupted that series of events to save another human being's life because of the potential that one or both of them could have a virus that is 99.8% survivable. I mean, I got to tell you, I'm not getting used to this. I'm just not. Well, now I'm in the fight to get my father some human companionship as he goes through what is traumatic to anybody, particularly a 90-year-old man. We'll see how that goes. Maybe in Alabama, they can see how damaging that is. All right, on to the massive stimulus bill. So much to say about this, and then I have a big question I'll bring up in a little bit, but not one Republican voted for this bill as they continue to fight the good fight against spending when they know they can't stop it. It was really interesting to me. Jimmy Dore, who is this liberal comedian, he's got a YouTube channel and a podcast that I really like for his honesty. I disagree with him on a ton of different stuff. This is a very progressive liberal. He believes in free college, free health care, $15 minimum wage, all of these things that I think he just is, his economic understanding is just abhorrent. But look, he's honest. He didn't buy into the Russia hoax. He realized how bad Biden and Kamala Harris are for any progressives. He was a Bernie Sanders fan, and then he watched Bernie Sanders sell him out time and time again. And I looked yesterday, and he has a video entitled, AOC Lied About Using Leverage to Get $15 Minimum Wage. Now, again, I totally disagree with Jimmy Dore thinking that $15 an hour minimum wage is anything but destructive to the small business community in particular and the rest of his harebrained ideas. But at least, you know, he's honest. And he's had on libertarians, and he'll talk to conservatives. He'll talk to anybody. His target is generally the powerful people. And it is just so much fun for me to watch anybody, because he was a big Squad fan, too, because they were the progressives, right? Now, again, I disagree with him, but I don't hate him for that. And one of the reasons is Jimmy Dore doesn't have any power over me. That's why I save all of my rage for the people who actually propose to butt into my life. But it's always fun to see somebody wake up and realize that they have been betrayed by politicians. it's one of my favorite things, because eventually everybody will figure it out. We're still a long way away from that, judging by the, 150 million people who breathlessly ran to the polls to make sure that their guy got in. And I don't care which party you support. You support them. They don't give a crap about you. So the Republicans right now are pretending to be about spending. And what Jimmy Dore is seeing is what everybody should notice now, which is your party is always a big fighter for those things that get you all riled up and get you excited to get out to the polls and to send them money. They're all fired up about those things when they know they can't win. But when they get power, have you ever noticed the amount of whiffing that goes on? They just, gosh golly gee willikers, they just don't seem to get around to those things. That for the years that they were in the minority party, they screamed about, they clenched fist in the air, shaking. And now the Republicans are doing that about all this spending. But when the Republicans were in power, $1 trillion deficits, massive spending bills. The Senate passed a $2.2 trillion stimulus bill last year. President Trump, Republican president, signed it. President Trump signed four different budgets that were all $800 to $1 trillion in deficit spending. And he'd say little things like, oh, don't send me another bill like this. I'm going to sign this one, but I don't want to sign another one. And then he signed three more. And so it's just fun to watch, you know, Jimmy Dore wake up and see that, oh, all of those things that AOC promised him, they don't actually really care about those things. It's like the Republicans on repealing Obamacare. It's funny that they don't even talk about that anymore. Maybe they'll start campaigning on that for 2022. How many years, how many election cycles? They said, if you just give us the reins of power. And then you get a Republican president, a Republican Senate, and a Republican Congress, and Obamacare is still the law of the land. Or entitlement reform. How many times have I heard Republicans say, if we just get the House and the Senate, it's time for us to have an adult conversation about spending, and one of the first things we need to do is tackle entitlement reform. Have they done it? Crickets. No. Immigration reform? Never quite got around to that. Spending? They're fired up about it now. If you give them back the House and the Senate in 2022, they pinky swear they're really going to go after the spending. Ending the wars? Hadn't quite gotten around to that. One of my favorites, is because it's been going around since the 1980s, is we're going to end the Department of Education. We're going to shrink this government. Department of Education has been an absolute train wreck. Look at the results we've gotten since we had the Department of Education. And really what they end up with are things like, well, we're going to do a balanced budget amendment. This is what they say because they think you're stupid. And I got to tell you, they've got some basis to believe that the American people are pretty stupid, but a balanced budget amendment would be so incredibly hard to get done. You're talking about an amendment to the Constitution that has to be voted in by, what is it, two-thirds or something like that. Then it has to go and be ratified by the states. I mean, it's a process that would absolutely never happen in this country, ever. And the Republicans know that, so that's why they float it out there to you. But it is absolutely fascinating to watch the Republicans. And look, I'm with them. It's just that they have zero credibility right now. I'm back to this. And the thing is, this is not over. Listen to this. Just hours after the House passed the Democrats' $1.9 trillion stimulus package, which will unleash another wave of stimmies, that will inevitably find their way into millions of Robin Hood and other discount brokerage accounts. We have got a stock market propped up on one side by the Federal Reserve just printing money out of thin air like Zimbabwe. And on the other side, the government and the Treasury handing out little checks that people put into a stock account to go out and buy stocks, thinking all they ever do is go up. We're going to get rich off our stimmies. I mean, this is the underpinnings of the greatest financial markets in the world right now. Absolutely insane. But again, just hours after the House passed the Democrats' $1.9 trillion stimulus package, President Joe Biden said Wednesday he would unveil, quote, the next phase, unquote, of the U.S. COVID-19 response on Thursday, which is also the one-year anniversary of the first COVID-inspired lockdowns in the U.S. Happy birthday, COVID lockdowns! Quote, tomorrow night, I've got to work on it. I've been lazy about this. I've got to come up with a Biden impression. If the late-night comedians, this is really amazing to watch, all of the late-night comedians that have just done nothing but relentless Trump bashing for 4 years, they can't seem to find anything funny about a Joe Biden speech or his style or his hesitancy or his stuttering or his forgetting where he is. Funny, that seems like that's kind of a lob It's like a really teeing up something for a team of comedy writers at a late night show, but the late night host just can't seem to find their way around to making fun of Joe Biden at all. But Joe Biden tonight, tomorrow night, I'm going on prime time to address the American people and talk about what we went through as a nation this past year. But more importantly, I'm going to talk about what comes next. This $1.9 trillion, this is just the warm-up act. Of course, the $2.2 trillion the Republicans passed last year, that was really, you know, that was the preamble, I guess. Quote, I'm going to launch the next phase of the COVID response and explain what we will do as a government and what we will ask of the American people, he said. There is light at the end of this dark tunnel. This must have been a written statement. There's no ums or errs or stutters in this as I'm reading through it. It must have been written out. There is light at the end of the dark tunnel over the past year. We cannot let our guard down now or assume that victory is inevitable. Together, we're going to get through this pandemic and usher in a healthier, more hopeful future. So this is not over. This is the beginning. I would imagine he's going to tell us something about infrastructure, a couple of $1 trillion in infrastructure spending. And this came out from CNS, our reliable website for tracking federal spending. Federal taxes, federal spending, and the federal deficit all set records in the first 5 months of fiscal 2021, October through February, according to the monthly Treasury statement released today. Listen to this. Federal taxes hit a record, $1.436 trillion for the October through February period, and federal spending hit a record, $2.482 trillion. That resulted in a record deficit. This is in the first 5 months of this fiscal year, a record deficit of $1,046,654,000,000 in 5 months. This is before the $1.9 trillion spending bill and whatever harebrained idea Joe Biden is going to unleash on us tonight. I would like to get the protocol. I wonder what the protocol, what is the drug protocol? They got to finally trot Joe Biden out in front of the American people for a public speech on prime time. I would really like to know the pharmaceutical cocktail that is going to let him get through a 5 to 10 minute speech about this stuff. When I come back, I've got a serious question to ask about this bill, the $2.2 trillion bill before, all of the spending, just all of it. It is the question that nobody will ask. We are always trying to extend. If you know what the Overton window is, it's that area where the political class, media, they try to give us kind of an allowable area of commerce. Everything has to be debated within these two fine points. I am always trying to expand the Overton window and ask questions that are outside of what most people ask, and yet it is, to me, one of the most glaringly obvious questions that could be asked as we watch Washington, D.C. bankrupt this nation. I'll be right back.
Think back to your childhood. I bet you can recall that one person who was always tattling on you. You took an extra cookie from the jar. They told mom. Didn't brush your teeth before bed. They ratted you out. Well, our own bodies are a lot like those childhood tattletales, consistently giving us reports of our health and well-being. Naturally You, a nutrition response testing center, uses a natural, scientific, and non-invasive system of analyzing your body to discover the underlying causes of ill health. Certified practitioners at Naturally You use your body's neurological reflexes and acupuncture points to determine what nutrients your body needs, then designs a dietary supplement program based on your body and condition. If you have struggled with weight, fatigue, or ongoing health issues, Naturally You invites you to join them this Tuesday night for a free workshop. Visit naturallyyou.fit to reserve your spot. That's naturallyyou.fit.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB, and it's Thursday, so we've got Stephen Utroska in from Americans for Prosperity. He comes in usually 10 to 11. He's in early today. I'm glad he is because I need some explanation here. Okay, so you saw, Stephen, they passed this $1.9 trillion on top of. I saw a list. I didn't look at it. This is the sixth stimulus bill since COVID hit.
Yeah, I think that's right. For a total of $6 trillion now.
$6 trillion is what they've spent just under the guise of coronavirus.
Yep.
Is that including what the Federal Reserve has added to its balance sheet?
No. That's just in bills that they passed. So I saw Thomas Massie post yesterday about it. And, you know, he argued against the first $2 trillion bill that they passed a year ago.
He tried to get him to force him to come in and at least vote for it. Trump lost his mind on him, wanted him run out of the Republican Party because he dared to make everybody vote for it.
But I am glad to say that every Republican, I think, voted against this one, right?
Right.
Right. They voted for every other one under Trump. But now with this one, this is too much now. It's too much.
Well, you know, I said yesterday, it's kind of like when you see a movie and, you know, there's an attack on the military base and everybody runs into a room and they grab guns out of the gun cabinet to go out and tackle the it's like there's a cabinet there of Republican spines, and so as soon as the Democrats get in control, they all run through here and they get a spine. They get very principled as soon as the Democrats take control of the stuff.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I will say, at least for us in Mississippi, Wicker came out pretty early on, you know, with the stimulus bill and said, hey, I'm not voting for this. This is terrible. It's just, you know,
this bill or the ones last year?
No. This bill.
So he was okay with last year.
Yeah, but, well, at least he came out early on for this one. Cindy Hyde Smith, it took her quite a while to come out against this bill. And so we actually, AFP, we put out, you know, some, you know, advertising here in Mississippi and on our Facebook page and everything else, just kind of saying, hey, where is Cindy? Like, what's she doing? Like, why is she not coming out against this?
Yeah.
And then she eventually did, but about a week ago, right before the vote, she came out against it. So I'm glad that she did and she voted against it, but.
Well, you know politics better than I do, because you actually watch the sausage being made. When the Republicans all came out against Obamacare, I know Republicans. Obamacare was written by the health insurance industry. It was Max Baucus's, I think he's Montana, I think. His chief of staff essentially was in charge of writing the bill. She was a former executive with Aetna or Humana or one of these big insurance companies. This was written for the insurance companies, you know, to force the American people to buy a product. And then the Republicans all came out and voted no against it, but they knew they were going to lose and Obamacare is going to become the law of the land. They made a big campaign issue of it. But I know a lot of Republicans get money from the health insurance industry. So is there this unspoken rule behind the scenes where they just say, okay, look, politically it's good for us to vote no. And the health insurance people just say, oh, knock yourselves out. If you want to, go out there and vote. Because it wasn't presented as a health insurance bill. It was presented as a loving gesture to the uninsured. Would the health insurance lobbyists just tell the Republicans, oh, yeah, go ahead and vote no. It doesn't matter. It's going to pass anyway. And so the Republicans get this cover where they get to come out and pretend like they're against it, even though they know it's going to pass. And when it passes, it's going to benefit the same lobbyists that lobby Republicans in the first place. And we're just too stupid to realize
it. That's it. That's exactly what happens.
All right. Good. Yeah.
That's exactly what happens. I mean, so there's deals. Yeah, you know, they're going around and finding people, you know, especially, you know, the principled guys that, you know, are at least publicly principled and say, oh, you know, I can't vote for it. They're coming around saying, look, you know, we're going to let you off on this one. We know you got to talk to your base. You got to be able to say you're going to vote against. That's okay. We've got the votes we need.
Right.
So you can vote against this one. But I tell you what, when it comes to a hard vote, when it's a very split vote and it comes down on party line votes, the parties are going to hold those people in line usually, and if you stray off of that, then you know there's going to be consequences. Just like, you know, last week we were
Justin
talking about
Amash.
Justin Amash talking about how the consequences are. That's how it is. So if they know they've got the votes, they don't care, you know.
Right.
And so there was a specific legislator. I won't mention who it is, but. He kept getting a lot of flack because he was voting against the Republican Party all the time. And so leadership called him into the office and said, man, we can't have you doing this. You're pulling other guys away, you know, making them you're principled and all this. And, you know, other guys are starting to become principled, too. We can't have you doing this. And so he actually had a spreadsheet together of all the votes he had made and said, well, let me show you this. He said, every vote that has been on, a very tight party line vote, I've voted with you. So the ones I vote against you on are the ones you don't need me anyways.
Yeah.
He's like, because, you know, when it comes down to a party line vote, you know, not always, but sometimes those party line votes are actually, you know, because they're standing up for the principles, you know, the parties are standing up, like this one, you know, all Republicans voted against it as they should have.
Right.
Right. So when it comes down to that, so he said, look, on every one that you needed me because it was right down the line, I voted with you. because it was a principled vote. All the ones that I voted against you were all the ones that you had all Republicans and Democrats voting for him, and I was the one or two guys that voted against it.
Yeah,
and so leadership kind of left him alone after that because they realized, hey, when we need this guy, he actually does vote with us. But then when we don't need him, because we have all the Democrats with us, then
yeah. Well, I mean, the Republicans did not have this. I have seen some great grandstanding by all kinds of Republicans in Washington, D.C. about the spending bill. And they're all dead right. Everything they say is exactly right. This is a socialist bill. Only a small portion of it's going to COVID. I mean, they're right on all these things. But they were completely quiet when Trump was the one presenting these things, when it was Steven Mnuchin. I mean, during the Trump presidency, Steven Mnuchin, the former Goldman Sachs banker that Trump installed over the Treasury, and Nancy Pelosi, the two of them were creating the bills. Trump was approving them, and then Republicans were voting for them, and they said absolutely nothing. So, yeah. I mean, and it wasn't that long ago. I mean, I'm reaching back to the Obamacare vote, but this was months ago they were doing these things, and so they just have zero credibility.
I think every time they raised the debt ceiling under Trump, he said, this is the last time I will sign this.
Oh, Trump was the biggest talker ever. I mean, when the first spending bill that came, he made a big public thing. I don't like this bill. There's a lot in there. There's a lot of extra spending. Don't send me another one like this again. And then he signed three more, without a peep. And nobody holds him accountable because he's their guy. I have a very serious and what I think is sincere question to ask about any of these things, any of these spending bills. I don't care if they're these massive giveaways, welfare state, warfare state. What is the social contract that I have signed up to? Why do I have to contribute money to this? Because a bunch of other people, largely in other states, I guess looking at the Electoral College, in other states voted for this guy and for these representatives. And I say the same thing if it was the Republicans. I have almost an unblemished record of voting for people that are never elected, meaning that outside of what has now become an embarrassing vote that I cast for Donald Trump in 2016, not embarrassing because it was for Trump, but embarrassing because I actually cast a vote for part of this machine. But for 15 years, I have not voted for any of the mainstream Republicans. I certainly have not voted for any Democrats. I've voted Libertarian, Constitution Party, or abstained from a race. What is the social construct? What is the contract? What is the thinking where I should be responsible for footing part of the bill of this thing?
Yeah, I don't know. Look, the social contract was first kind of thought up of, or at least extensively written by Rousseau, who's a French philosopher. And since then, they have basically taken that and said, hey, this is a great way we can make people pay for everything else. You've got a social contract you have to help people. We're going to take your money. Let's pay for it.
Yeah.
You've got to do it. So, man, I don't know. I never signed a contract. I know you certainly didn't.
I did not. And I think I've got a 15-year unblemished record of not voting for any of the people. I got to tell you, if you voted for some of these mental midgets. I mean, I saw things yesterday online, some people making what I think is a fair enough emotional, intellectual point. If the Democrats all voted for this, let the Democrats fund this bill, pay the $1.9 trillion for this and for the rest of their programs. I mean, it seems to kind of make some sense, but I really don't quite understand how we have so little control over this stuff, yet we are just expected. And it is... it is widely accepted. This is from Libertarians, Republicans, Democrats, Independents, Green Party. Everybody just accepts the fact that their paycheck is going to come in light of what they actually earned every day. A chunk of it's going to be taken to fund this stuff. And I just flat out disagree with that.
Well, and it's not what we're going to have to pay. It's not about us. This is about the next generation.
Yes, and the generation after that.
And it's always been that way.
Yes.
So you look at the issues we have today. Look, Social Security, it's failing. We've got to prop it up. We've got to do things. We're stealing money from it, borrowing from it or whatever. Social Security is such in a bad place. But that's going to fall on my generation to prop that up. But that was not my generation's policy that we put in.
Yeah, I mean, think about the kids. I mean, my kids are 19. I think they did vote in the last presidential election, but they've essentially not voted for anything of the first $27 trillion in debt. How is it possible that they can be expected to do this? It's like there's this invisible bond. I think it's a threat. I mean, it is like the mafia. The IRS and our government basically is one of those things. Hey, you got a pretty nice life there. I'd hate for anything to happen to it. Essentially, is their means of collecting taxes. But you're talking about a country of, 80 million people who would probably identify as Republican. How do these 80 million people not, there's not one leader on the right in particular. Now, Democrats think the government should handle everything. So I think they might disagree with me. They believe in the social con, but there's a lot of Republicans who think this is they fall for this. This is the price you pay for a civilized society. I don't know if they've looked around recently. I don't really know if we're getting our money's worth when it comes to civilized society. But how is it there's not one leader on the right in Republican parties? Now, there are libertarians who bring this up, but their voice is so small. Not one leader on the right that just says tax strike or something. This is beyond insane. We cannot stop what Washington, D.C. is doing. The only thing we can do is starve them to death, and we will no longer participate in this financially.
Yeah, and actually, you make a great point. So back to this bailout, there's actually provision in it that the Democrats put in it. It says states who take this money, if Mississippi accepts some of this bailout money, then there's stipulation there that says the state of Mississippi cannot lower taxes.
What?
Yep.
Would that interfere with this reduction Absolutely. Of state income tax?
Absolutely. So the way it does is it's based on tax revenue, so you can't reduce tax revenue. You can't make any cuts. So if we, one of the issues I have with the income tax bill, and we'll talk about it in the next hour, but one of the reasons I have issue with it is because there's no cuts. It's a, 100% tax swap. We're just taking, money out of one hand, putting it in the other. And, if we're going to pass a tax elimination bill, let's cut some taxes, right?
Right.
And that's the whole point of it. This would basically say we couldn't do that.
Wow.
So if we take the money.
Why am I just hearing about this from you and the Republicans are not jumping up and down about this, or are they?
Yeah. Well, no, they're not. They're not. Absolutely not. And that's the problem. So you and I are very politically involved. We watch a lot of things. We look behind the scenes to see what's going on. We're not just, listening to mainstream media. We're not just listening to, what our elected officials are telling us. So we kind of know what's going on, but the overwhelming majority of Americans don't have the time to do that. They're hardworking, they're coming home, spending time with their families, they're going to church, doing things like that, activities. They don't have time to and just dive off the dive aboard into the yeah. back scenes of political
Believe
goings.
Me, I know. Yeah.
And so, I mean, you and I understand that, but mainstream Americans don't understand that and don't see that because they're not going behind closed doors like you and I are looking at that. So, they focus on mainstream media to give them, things. They're looking at their politicians who, we've already talked about, that's all, a political theater.
Yeah. The actors in the theater.
That's right. So,
roll the credits.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, if that's all you're watching, then you think, hey, your guy, he's up there fighting for you because that's what you see. But now you don't know behind closed doors. He just made deals.
Yeah,
to vote that way or vote this way, and they're going to give him a narrative that kind of fits his political philosophy,
well,
so he can go back to his constituents and say, well, yeah, I did vote on this. Let me tell you why I voted on this, and washes it and makes it seem like a good deal. And
well, and I think it's gotten even worse than that because it felt a little bit like people were kind of waking up. I mean, they were waking up against their Democratic Party. They were voting for Bernie Sanders. Not that that was Bernie Sanders was a good idea, but they were waking up. Republicans woke up to the Bushes and the establishment Republicans that voted for Donald Trump. They're trying to put us back to sleep with the stimmies, so it almost that's the headline on the news. I watched it this morning. When is everybody going to get their check? Let's go to our correspondent. When do you think checks will go out? So now, and again, I love the idea that they're bribing us with our own money. Always cracks me up and strikes me as incredibly pathetic. But anyway, we got to run to a quick break. We're talking to Stephen Utroska, Americans for Prosperity. He'll be with us for the next hour. Stay with us. All night. Food allergies know how difficult it can be to find quality, affordable restaurants that cater to your needs. That's why the folks over at Your Pie have made a commitment to ensure everyone can enjoy great-tasting pizza. Your Pie offers gluten-free dough, vegan, non-dairy cheese, and non-dairy sorbet. Just ask for it next time you're in line. Matter of fact, just mention any allergy you have, and the folks at Your Pie will go over the top to make sure you can safely enjoy their delicious food. That's Your Pie in Gluckstadt, where food allergies never stop you from being able to express your inner pizza.
right into this world all alone. God takes your soul.
All right, we're back. Last little segment here, and then we're going to get into what the Mississippi State Legislature's been doing, and I'm, my blood's boiling of what I'm hearing, so stick around. You'll hear what's going on in the State House here. So anyway, just I don't know. You know, the Overton window of allowable political discussion does not include the idea that – I mean, the libertarian mantra is taxation is theft, and I truly believe that. I find nothing compassionate from the Democrats – that they try to hide behind compassion for, I don't care, illegals or poor people or whatever it is, taking money from one person involuntarily and giving it to another. That's not an act of compassion. That's an act of theft and, you know, grandstanding, essentially. But the Republican Party, there's no movement for this. I think there should just be a general strike in this country. I mean, it's to that point. Seriously, this is $1.9 trillion. Now you're saying there's been, what, $6 trillion in coronavirus yep. spending? For something that never should have happened, as Harry Brown said, the government's good at one thing, breaking your leg, handing you a crutch, and telling you you couldn't walk without them. I've just signed nothing. I do not claim to want any. I want nothing from the government, and I want to give the government nothing. It seems like in a free country, you would be within those rights, and that's just not even discussed.
Yeah, one of the sayings I really like that I see passed around the libertarian community is, "We just wanted to be left alone, and for that, they hated us."
Yeah, right.
You know, so they, you know, look, statists are going to state, right? They, you know, they can't help it. They want to control your life. And you just want to be left alone and do your own thing, but they can't have that because they need your labor.
Right, exactly. Oh, we're fuel. We're the collateral. Yeah. I mean, essentially, every dollar that's borrowed is on the backs of future Americans' labor, including our children and our grandchildren. And the fact that we've got generations of baby boomers and Gen Xers, which I am, that just sit around and accept this stuff is just, oof, it yep. gets me fired up.
Yeah, Rothbard, you know, had a famous quote that he said, you know, it's easy to be conspicuously compassionate with somebody else's money.
Right, exactly.
Mike Madison here. All of us should be flying our U.S. flag. And now's the perfect time to contact a complete flag source to have a flagpole installed at your home or business. For a limited time, all U.S. flags up to 5x8 along with flagpole setups are 15% off. That's 15, 20, and 25-foot in-ground kits, sectional, and aluminum. House spinner poles will keep your flag from wrapping in the wind, and a complete flag source has all of the right brackets. Visit a complete flag source, I-55 North Frontage Road, Jackson, or online at CompleteFlags.com.
I need your arms around me. I need to feel your touch. I need your understanding. I need your love so much.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB, and it's Thursday. So we do our Freedom and Prosperity Hour here with Stephen Utroska from Americans for Prosperity. We're going to talk about what's been going on in the state legislature here. You know, I've been looking at what goes on in the federal government and thinking, well, you know, it's lost. D.C. is just lost, so we better get control of our state government. And the more I talk to you, Stephen, I get a little more aggravated at even our state government here. I want to bring up one good potential piece of good news, I guess. Okay, so here's the email that I got from our Secretary of State. The Mississippi business community experienced phenomenal growth during one of the most economically challenging years in our nation's history in 2020. We witnessed a net of more than 30,000 new businesses formed in Mississippi. And then this is the comparison here, so you understand what that means. A tremendous increase from the net of roughly 3,000 new businesses formed in 2019. How is that possible? Is this just a bunch of people who got laid off thinking they'd start their own business and paying the $50 Secretary of State to set up an LLC? I mean, how is that possible?
I think that's probably some of it. People getting laid off from their regular jobs, so they try to, you know, start their own business. I also kind of wonder if, you know, there's a lot of bailout money coming to small businesses.
Yeah.
And so I wonder if a lot of people were, you know, rushed out and started a little LLC and then filed for some of the, you know, the recovery money. But yeah, I really don't know. I don't know if that's true or not. That's just interesting. You know, that's an assumption I may have that could be part of it. But I don't know. You know, I'm friends with Secretary of State Michael Watson. He really is a great guy. He was in the state senate for I think two terms, and he was one of the fighters for us.
Yeah.
So he's a good guy. But I haven't reached out to him. I need to do that and reach out to him because I saw the same thing that there's 30,000, 10 times as many jobs started last year than the year before. So
businesses. Yeah.
Yeah, business. Excuse me. Yeah, businesses. Yeah. So, yeah, I'll find out about that, and I'll let you know next time I come on.
I didn't think about the LLC thing. That's got to account for part of it. But, I mean, first thing I saw, there's a glitch in the website or something like that, but it's too late now. We've already got national attention for this, that Mississippi really just leapfrogged over everybody else when it comes to new business creation here. So, at the same time, apparently we lost population during the last year.
I will tell you another thing is, with medical marijuana passing, I think in the last couple of months you've seen a ton of people. I've seen a ton of new medical marijuana related LLC startup in Mississippi.
Yeah, they got
that could be part of it too.
Yeah.
I certainly don't think that's the driver of the majority of them, but I think that's there's a bunch of people coming into Mississippi now looking to starting up businesses for that. So
yeah, okay. So well, let's talk about we kind of bridged this. We talked about the bailout bill, and you just floored me with this idea that states can't, if they take the money, they cannot cut their taxes in the state or reduce revenue. What would Mississippi get from this stimulus bill outside of the stimmies to all of us? But
I'm not sure what the total amount is. The kind of the bad side about being a Republican, if you're voting against a bill, then they're not gonna let you put everything you want into it. And so I think a good majority of the bailout money is going to the blue states, specifically places like Illinois that they're $40 billion in debt in just their public retirement system.
Right.
So they're getting a lot of money to bail that out. So there's a lot of,
I think Texas was in the top four for recipients of spending. So it looked to me like it's going to go to everybody. But again, as everybody, and I'm just going to say it again because I think it's worth just perspective-wise, Mississippi gets bailed out every single year. So it is a little difficult for me to I don't want them to bail out California, and Illinois is, they are a financial train wreck. I mean, the irresponsibility of what they've done in Illinois is absolutely horrible, but they're a net contributor. I mean, I'd rather have no money go from Illinois ever to the federal government and then Illinois figure out its own stuff and go bankrupt all on their own too. So, but Mississippi, it's kind of hard for us to sit here and judge other states when we're at the benefit of it
all. I've got friends that live in Illinois, and I kind of feel bad for them because Illinois, the state of Illinois, is run by Chicago.
Yeah.
So just think about Mississippi. If the state of Mississippi was run by Jackson, the politicians in Jackson, the mayor of Jackson, if they ran the state of Mississippi, how bad we would look? We would look just as bad as Illinois.
So, what's the structure there that gives?
Oh, it's just, that's their population center. All, they just have so many people that live there. So all their state, representatives and state senators are all based on population. And so they have the majority of the population lives in, the Chicagoland area.
Right.
And so that's where the majority of their representatives and senators are from. And so they basically control the rest of the state. The rest of the state's cornfields.
Yeah, right, yeah.
So there's very few populations. Yeah. So they have, you have state legislators who cover huge masses of land, but very few people in other areas of the state. And then you have, a concentration of power in that Chicago area. So
with this bill has passed. It is now passed. So what does this clause of not lowering taxes in a state mean to Mississippi in this push that we finally got some movement on of reducing or removing the income tax?
Yeah. So, and it was kind of slipped in. I didn't even know anything about it until yesterday. There was a Wall Street Journal article came out and said this and specifically mentioned Mississippi, Arkansas, West Virginia, I think Idaho maybe, but at least I know Mississippi, Arkansas, and West Virginia were named, and it was very interesting to me because we have AFP chapters in all those states, and all three of those, us, Arkansas, and West Virginia are all trying to reduce our income tax right now. So what the stipulation basically says is that over the next 3 years until 2024, any state that takes this bailout money could not reduce their state tax revenue. And so back to, you know, my what I said earlier about this income tax bill is if we're going to pass an income tax elimination bill, we want to cut taxes with it. We don't want a revenue neutral tax swap.
Right.
That doesn't really benefit us that much. Although, you know, with the sales tax increase, sales tax is a better form of taxation. If there's such a thing as a better form of taxation, you know, that's better than income tax, a tax on your labor.
At least you choose it.
Right. So, I mean, it philosophically, it's better. But if it's a tax swap, that's basically all this. If we take money, my current understanding of it is, and I've got a ton of policy people looking at this. I sent a message to the chief staff of the governor to ask him if they've seen this and what their take on it is, so we can try to figure this out, because we're pushing this bill right now, right?
Right.
We're pushing an income tax
bill. As we speak. Yeah.
As we speak. So we're trying to figure out the, you know, any fallouts of it. But we're also trying to understand if we need to pass this bill now rather than later, if we can get this bill, our income tax bill, out, if we can change it, you know, correct it some, make some amendments to it, and then get it out now, are we going to beat that deadline? And if so,
is there a deadline, or is it just?
I think it's once you take the money.
Yeah.
You know? So once you take the money, you're on the hook for
it. What is the rationale of that? What do Democrats in Washington D.C. care about states reducing their income tax or reducing taxes?
Yeah, reducing taxes. Well, that's it. They stand on a platform of not reducing taxes. They want people's money. They can't fund everything if they're just, you know, throwing all this money out there, and then these Republican states are cutting taxes on them. So.
That's a sickness. I mean, that's a control, a need for control over things that have, you know, what does Nancy Pelosi or some no-name Democrat representative from the state of Washington, what do they care what the tax rate is in Mississippi? Why do they have any say in that whatsoever? I mean, that is just such a blatant overrunning of states' rights.
I think it is, and I think it's very likely that it could get thrown out in court. I think it's unconstitutional. I think that there's Supreme Court precedent to show that the federal government can't do that. They can't use money, federal dollars, as incentives to change state policy.
But they do that all the time.
They do it all the time. I think in this case, we could and should file a lawsuit against the federal government, as, you know, the state of Mississippi could do that. But again, it's a 3-year stipulation from 2021-2024, unless there's an emergency declaration, that we could ask the Supreme Court to rule on in a quick manner. It could take that long to get through the court process.
Yeah.
You know, so, and that's why they did that. I mean, they know that they can't control it forever, so they do it in, you know, a short period of time that, you know, would take the court procedures that long to get through, and they can pretty much do whatever they want.
That is just sick, you know, and I think that's the kind of power that people don't even realize. I mean, I know some decent Democrats. I have friends who are Democrats, vote Democrat.
Sure.
They didn't like Trump. They don't like the Republican Party. I think they're misguided on economics is probably the biggest disagreement we have. But I would imagine they have no idea that kind of stuff goes on.
Well, so, you know, I'll throw in my pitch. Americans for Prosperity is a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization. And we really are. I mean, we work with anybody to do good is our mantra. And so under the dome in Jackson, I work with a lot of Democrats.
Yeah,
I really do. I mean, and there's some great Democrats out there, but
there are freedom issues that Democrats still stand for occasionally.
That's right. Yeah. So, but, you know, like you said, when it comes to economic issues, we usually do not find ourselves, you know, on the same page with Democrats, even here in Mississippi. So, you know, there's a lot going on in the legislature. There's a lot that we can fill up this entire hour talking about. Several big bills, income tax being one of them, the medical marijuana bill, you know, I want us to talk about.
Okay.
A few other bad bills that have died, so we'll
take the good news first. All right, we got to take a break. We'll come back. We'll start going through the laundry list of stuff. They just have some deadlines there. Is that why there's been a lot of movement in the last week?
Yeah, that's right. Yesterday was a floor deadline for bills that generated in the opposite house. They swap bills over now, and there was a deadline to get those out yesterday.
Yeah, okay. All right, great. We're talking to Stephen Utroska, Americans for Prosperity. We'll get our legislative update when we come back. Stay with us.
Think back to your childhood. I bet you can recall that one person who was always tattling on you. You took an extra cookie from the jar. They told mom. Didn't brush your teeth before bed. They ratted you out. Well, our own bodies are a lot like those childhood tattletales, consistently giving us reports of our health and well-being. Naturally You, a nutrition response testing center, uses a natural, scientific, and non-invasive system of analyzing your body to discover the underlying causes of ill health. Certified practitioners at Naturally You use your body's neurological reflexes and acupuncture points to determine what nutrients your body needs, then designs a dietary supplement program based on your body and condition. If you have struggled with weight, fatigue, or ongoing health issues, Naturally You invites you to join them this Tuesday night for a free workshop. Visit naturallyyou.fit to reserve your spot. That's naturallyyou.fit.
We're back with Stephen Utroska, Americans for Prosperity. So, Stephen, tell us lots going on at the Capitol. So bills, bad bills?
Yeah, let's start off with some bad bills that died. So, actually, some good news in it. There's very little of that, so it won't take us long. There's a Department of Tourism bill. So, we already fund tourism in Mississippi. A lot of them through local organizations. The state has some money that they spend, but they actually wanted to create a new department. And so, of course, they said this year with this bill, it would not increase any tourism dollars that we're putting in. We're just creating this department using some of the other, the monies we already spend towards tourism to create the department. It's going to be more efficient that way. And so this was how it's packaged, right? But let me tell you, I think most of your listeners would probably agree that nothing the government does is ever more efficient.
Right, yeah.
And
adding more people to be more efficient.
And it will never cut spending in the future. So we came out and opposed this bill because we knew it would just, allow for future growth of government, increase spending, and it actually died yesterday. It died on the calendar. Senate Bill 2765 was the medical marijuana bill. We came out very strong against it in the Senate. They're basically trying to go around the people's wishes, what they pass in 65. This is a way that they think if they pass this, they can, undo 65. 65 is in court right now. So their mode of operation for this is, hey, let's put this out here. Maybe give the Supreme Court some cover to strike down 65, because then they can say, well, 74% of Mississippians did want medical marijuana, but the legislature gave it to them. So here it is.
Isn't that not how our system is supposed to work? Isn't the legislative and the judicial branch supposed to be separate, and the Supreme Court should just be judging that case based on the merits of Mary Hawkins Butler's nasty little challenge to it?
Absolutely, 100%. Yes. And I'm not saying anything bad about our Supreme Court. I'm not saying that they would do that, but I certainly don't want to give them the opportunity to either.
But why are they waiting so long to hear this thing?
Well, that's a good question.
Yeah.
I'm not saying this answer, but one of the logical conclusions is they're waiting to see what the legislature does, right? I mean, that seems logical. I don't know if that's true or not, but it does seem logical. So, that bill yesterday, it was a Senate bill, passed the Senate at 1:30 in the morning a couple weeks ago. They fought it. Delbert Hoseman's pushing this bill. It's basically his bill. Senator Blackwell from
I want to make sure this is Delbert Hoseman's bill that he wants to subvert the will of the people who voted for 65, put in his own crony bill with a lot more government control and carve outs for big players to come in and dominate this industry rather than 65, which is a much more easy, accessible to the average Mississippian that might want to start a business in a new industry.
Yeah, 65 is, it will be the most free market medical marijuana bill in the country.
Right.
And, I mean, that's what conservatives should want is a free market, right?
Yeah.
Because that's economy.
Opportunity for Mississippians.
For everyone.
Yeah.
Everyone, not the big players. We're not giving carve-outs to small businesses or big businesses. It's open for everybody. And so that's what we should want. That's what 65 does. So this bill, 2765, started out with you had to have $20 million in assets, $10 million in cash, money on hand. I mean, it had all kind of crazy stipulations. So in order to get it past the Senate, they amended it and actually brought that down a good bit. But either way, it's still a bad bill. So it went over to the House. We fought it in the House. We actually got a lot of support in the House to fight this bill. It ultimately died yesterday in the House. On the calendar,
they basically, which is what we talked about last week. Which is what was best for it.
That's exactly what we wanted. We wanted it to die in the House, and it did.
And then. Here we go.
So there, yep. So it's, look, you know, I say this all the time. It's a common saying around the Capitol. Is nothing's dead till it's dead. Well, this bill now, this medical marijuana bill, has now died twice. It died in the Senate. They brought it back up in the Senate after it died the first time.
Two senators who had voted against it went home because they were sleepy and they needed to get back to their houses. And so Delbert Hoseman orchestrates this disgusting move to get the senators after they leave the building. This is how we got the Federal Reserve Act.
And we're not talking about, you know, 5 or 6 o'clock in the afternoon. This is you know, 1 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah. That's how nasty this stuff is.
Yeah, 1 o'clock in the morning.
They waited them out.
Yeah, waited them out. 1 o'clock in the morning, brought it back up, passed it. So it died once in the Senate and then passed. So now it's come to the House. Yesterday, died on the calendar. They didn't bring it up. The House adjourned. It died again, right? Well, the Senate's still in session yesterday. So they find out that, hey, they killed our bill over in the House. So what do? They start finding where they can slip it into another bill. And so what they did... So the way the Senate works is you can't just slip language into any bill. It actually has to be germane, is what they say. So what do? They found Harper's Grace bill, which is a CBD oil bill that was passed a few years ago to be able to study CBD for children who have medical issues that CBD can help with, right?
And let's couch that, too. This bill was trotted out in the legislature and Harper Grace is a real girl who suffered real debilitating seizure disorders, and they all surrounded her and took pictures with her, and look what we're doing. We're trying to help this little girl, and the bill was actually crafted to put up so many hurdles that she never got access to the CBD products that would have helped her.
That's right, yeah.
And she and her mom became a champion of 65, the medical marijuana bill, and 65 was only put in because they could tell that the state legislature was not serious about helping people in Mississippi who needed it, including this little girl that they all took pictures with and tried to take credit with helping her.
Absolutely, that's it. So this bill, the new Harper Grace's bill would be, it's basically just an extension of the program. So there were some children who got on this study committee or the study program. So they're still under that. So we want to make sure we extend that, give it, you know, a couple more years to work until 65 gets in play, and then they can, you know, hopefully those children will be able to use
it.
Right, it'd be a moot point. But we had to extend that this year for those children that are on it now, so that they can continue to use it until medical marijuana gets into place. So of course the Senate, their medical marijuana bill that's a completely crony bill dies, and what do? They throw their medical marijuana bill on top of Harper Grace's bill.
Did they just take the entire language of that bill and just shove it in there?
Yep, that's it. They took the entire 2765, the one that, you know, that we had been fighting all along. They took it out after it died in the House and threw it in Harper Grace's bill, which to me is absolutely morally disgusting.
Yeah.
That they're going to take this bill that was started for a girl that couldn't even get it.
Right.
And here we are trying to change it, you know, amend the law for her and extend it so kids who are on it now can get it. And they're using that as an avenue to push their crony bill.
Okay, so now they've corrupted this again, and they're using these children as a shield because people want to extend this bill to try to help these children.
That's right.
The few children that they even helped. So now that bill, the CBD bill, goes to the House, and the House is going to have to vote on this with the new language of this crony 2765 in it.
Yep, that's it. I do want to mention for anybody who's listening that that upsets you, and it should. If you're listening, that should upset you. I'm going to give you a number. I'm going to give it twice while we're talking. Once here, I'll give it, if you're ready, 601-463-8741. Call that number. That is a number that that goes to the switchboard of the Capitol. You call there. It's a very nice lady who answers, and you just tell her, if you know your representative, you just say, I want to leave a message with my representative. Say, I want, you know, him to vote against this bill. She'll ask you your name, and you can leave a phone number if you want him to call you back. But call that number. That's how we get change in the Capitol, is people calling and leaving a message. They'll leave that message on their desk. If you're a representative and you come back and you've got 10 messages left on your desk, you know, paper messages where he had constituents call, it starts changing their minds.
So what would they be calling? What is the bill that's going to the House now?
So the Harper Grace's bill is not, it's HB 119. That's House Bill 119. That's the CBD oil research bill is basically what it is. But
Now, if the House votes no on this, what happens to the CBD legislation?
Yeah, so that dies. If there's nowhere else they can try to bring that back, it would die. And
they can't strip out this medical marijuana nonsense that they put in there and then just pass it as the CBD bill it was originally intended to be?
Yeah, I think there is an opportunity to do that, but the later we get in session, the more complicated it is to change bills like that. I hate to see this bill die, but it is disgusting that the Senate did this. And, you know.
Yeah. Well, ultimately, I mean, these kids are still going to be helped by 65.
That's right. Yeah.
I mean, one of the purposes of 65.
That's right. So once 65 goes in, you know, hopefully in August is when the patients are able to start getting their cards. I think that the Department of Health is on track right now to do that. They're not waiting. And I will give the Department of Health credit for that. They're not waiting around to see what the legislature does. They're not waiting around to see what the courts do. They are fully in gear, engaged in trying to get the their regulations out to be able to get businesses signed up by July to start producing, and then patients up by August so that they can start actually getting that product.
Yeah, as hard as I am on Thomas Dobbs about all of this coronavirus stuff and the masks and the shutdowns and all the rest of this hysterics that we have witnessed, it seems like he seems to be very matter of fact that they are just, you know, they are going through the system. And I don't see any hesitation from him. I haven't seen any protestation. He seems like he's stepping in and doing what he needs to do.
Yep, he is. And again, we'll give him credit for that. Yeah. He came out against it.
Right.
And I think they even filed, you know, an amicus brief in the Supreme Court against 65 on the court case. But he is taking it as a business approach, and he's got to do this by constitutional provision right now. It's in the Constitution right now. Until they strike it down from the Constitution, it's there, and he's got to do it, and he is. And he, you know, from the guys I know that are working with him to help write the regulations for the Department of Health, he is, you know, not trying to prevent this. He's very open and willing to work with them to get these regulations right so that we can get the program as it was intended by 65.
Any chance that he's just doing this because he knows all he has to do is just wait for somebody to, they'll strike this thing down and he can just do a happy dance at the end of this thing, but still get credit for, well, I was trying, but you know,
I don't think that's the case because I don't think you put the time and resources in to do as much as he is right now to get it up and going.
Okay, so. Good. All right, got to take a break. Plenty more to talk about with the legislature. What other bills are we going to take a look at?
We'll hit the income tax bill. Let's talk about it when we get back.
All right, good deal. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Mike Madison here. All of us should be flying our U.S. flag. And now's the perfect time to contact a complete flag source to have a flagpole installed at your home or business. For a limited time, all U.S. flags up to 5x8 along with flagpole setups are 15% off. That's 15, 20, and 25-foot in-ground kits, sectional, and aluminum. House spinner poles will keep your flag from wrapping in the wind, and a complete flag source has all of the right brackets. Visit a complete flag source, I-55 North Frontage Road, Jackson, or online at completeflags.com.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB, talking to Stephen Utroska from Americans for Prosperity, who is down at the legislature fighting to stop bad bills, help bills that expand freedom and opportunity here in Mississippi. Okay, income tax bill, where is that? They are trying to, the idea is we're trying to get rid of the state income tax here. Where are we?
Yeah, that's right. So this bill was introduced by the Speaker of the House. It overwhelmingly passed the House. Basically, what the bill does is it doesn't decrease the tax rate. It increases the your income tax exemption amount. So it would go up to approximately $50,000 a year, which you'd be as an individual be able to exempt, you know, $100,000 for a couple. You'd be able to exempt that from state income tax. So we have a progressive tax system. It's 4% and 5%, but most people pay on the 5% if you make over $10,000 a year. And so this would be a way to reduce the income tax that you pay, not really reduce the income tax, but it would, you know, eventually it would cut out $1.3 billion. Well, actually, in the first year, it would cut out $1.3 billion of income tax that the state of Mississippi collects. But it's a tax swap, so they're increasing 2.5% sales tax on any sales taxable item except for groceries. Groceries would be cut in half over a step down over a few years. It'd be cut down from 7% that we pay now to 3.5%. I've talked to the speaker's staff. I've talked to some high-ranking members in the Senate. I've spoke with the governor. I don't know that anybody sees this as being the best way to do it. I will give the speaker props. I think it started the conversation. I think it will mold into something that will be great for everybody. I think there's some issues as it is, so we're working to amend it. I talked to the speaker's chief of staff yesterday about some amendments we're looking to drop, and I think they're amendable to those. And so what we want to do is find out a way to cut the income tax in Mississippi. Again, I don't know that there's any good taxing structure, but income tax is certainly one of the worst kinds.
Yeah.
To me, income tax and property tax are number one and number two. And, we could argue over which is worse of those two, but they're both pretty bad.
Right.
Consumption tax is a much better way to tax. If you're going to tax something, that's a better way. Consumption tax or use tax is a better way to do it. So if we can get away from that income tax model, then I think we would see huge economic growth in Mississippi. So we're trying to do that with cuts, though. And, of course, now we're up against the gun with this potential bailout bill. So we're trying to push it, and we want to get this bill out. Right now it's hung up in the Senate. Yesterday was a deadline for general bills. A floor deadline. So this bill, because it's a revenue bill, so it wasn't impacted by yesterday's deadline. We'll have till Tuesday to get this bill out. So we're working hard in the Senate, and I would again encourage anybody that's listening, if you want to reduce your income tax, call the Senate and tell them don't kill this bill. They're talking, Delbert's talking about killing it. Delbert, he's not exactly the Republican type that likes to cut any taxes. But we think that we can amend this bill, but we got to get it out to the floor in the Senate to amend it. If it dies in committee, we'll never have a chance to change it to a good bill.
Yeah. Okay. So the action item then is to call the 601-463-8741, 601-463-8741, and say what?
Yep. So that goes to the Capitol switchboard. You just ask the nice lady that answers that. If you can, leave a message for your senator, tell them that you want to see this income tax bill come out to the floor. We want it passed. We want it amended, but we do want it passed. We want to get it moving.
Okay. And you said, so by next week, we're going to kind of know where this thing lands.
By Tuesday, yes. So next week when I come on the air next Thursday, we'll know one way or the other what happens with it. What the worst case scenario, what I see happening with this bill, I don't think they'll kill it. I think that would be very bad for Delbert. Delbert's got a bad rap as it is to begin with conservatives.
Yeah, he should.
Yeah, that's right. He's earned it. But I think the worst case scenario, what he'll do is he'll make it a study committee, which basically says we'll delay this bill.
Yeah.
We'll just think about it for another year. We'll come up and think about it again next year. But what that does is it actually does keep the bill alive because it's got to stay alive as a study committee. So it will give us an opportunity to amend it. Take the study committee back out of it and
next year.
No, this year.
We would still
have time this year to do it as long as it keeps it alive. But if he kills it, outright kills it in committee where it's at now, it's in finance committee with Josh Harkins, who's the senator for Rankin County. It's kind of in his hands right now as finance chairman. So if you're a Rankin County listener, reach out to Josh Harkins. We need him to consider this bill. We need him to get it out of committee. We need him to look at some amendments to it to actually make it a better bill. But we want to reduce income tax in Mississippi.
Yeah, as everybody should. Is there any talk in Jackson as we're talking about, switching from income tax over to a consumption tax, which ends up being, as we've talked about several shows, this ends up going on top of sales tax to replace the income tax. I heard Jackson saying they were looking at a 1%, a one penny, how they say it, a 1 cent tax increase, sales tax increase for the water issues. Is the legislature looking at the water in Jackson for anything right
now? Yeah, I mean, there's some talk there. Of course, Jackson wants a handout.
Right.
They want somebody else to pay for their, misdealings and, 50 years of not paying for their water issues.
You can't really blame, and I'm no Chakwe Lumumba fan or anything, but, every subsequent administration basically has this horrible, massively expensive problem dumped in their lap. So at least you can't really fault them for creating the problem. But at the same time, I mean, I just wonder how this ever ends.
Yeah, well, I'm not a resident of the city of Jackson, so I don't know all the issues they're having. But I've talked to a couple of my friends that do live in the city, and they said they can't even get a water bill.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh, the water bills were insane. And, you know, I mean, the Siemens thing, the water system
right.
in Jackson has been a catastrophe, rolling catastrophe for 30 years now.
Yeah, well, so this is the issue. They have had, you know, so I'm an engineer by trade. I worked for a consulting firm for most of my 11 years in my career before I got into politics. And this is the issue. They have had engineering firms come in and bid on coming and doing some work, right? But then they also told them as a stipulation of the contract, say, hey, you know, we want you to have this contract, you're the low bidder, but if you come in and do this and hire subcontractors, they got to be our buddies.
Yeah.
And so that's what happens with Siemens. They, you know, everybody else said, no, we can't do that because we're not going to be held on the, you know, we're not paying the price tag if this fails because it's going to come back on us. We're not doing that because your buddies we hired. We're going to hire the best people we can. Well, Siemens said, we'll take the contract and we'll do that. And that's what they did. And it cost them, you know, what, $90 million.
So that was it was the implementation by some subcontractors that really botched the whole Siemens rollout of the water meeting?
Water meter reading? Yeah, that's right. That's my own personal opinion of what happened just from, you know, me being in the industry and kind of from the outside. I don't know any of the inner workings of it. I wasn't involved in that project at all, but... from the outside looking in, as somebody who's been in that business,
yeah,
that's what I think.
Well, this is, you know, this is the whole premise of this entire show. Government's just, it's just, there is not a good government out there. It just doesn't matter the level, what a self-check it is. But if that's the situation, I'm sure the Clarion Ledger or somebody will do a deep dive investigative report and find out that's the reason and be able to name and shame. You know, so who got the Siemens contract? What administration was that? Was that Harvey?
Yeah, I don't remember
Johnson?
Which one that was.
Yeah,
like I said, I'm not involved in Jackson politics. You know, so I try to stay out of the state politics in Jackson. But you know,
right.
So the state capitol complex is owned by the state, and so now they're looking at, hey, you know, we've been relying on the city of Jackson. And, you know, you cut our water off at the Capitol, and now we can't, you know, we can't come into session if we don't have water kind of thing. So now a lot of the state agencies that are in the city of Jackson are now looking at digging their own wells so that they have their own water source so they don't have to rely on the city of Jackson. So that's just more money we're having to spend as a government, you know, as a state, because the city can't do what they're supposed to do.
Right.
But, that, you know, there's been some talk in the legislature about, you know, what can we do about the city of Jackson. But I think the sentiment is really just – That's their issue.
Yeah.
You know, let them deal with it. And the state can certainly come in and take over the city of Jackson if they want to. You know, that's why we have – look, I'm a huge fan of local control, right? I think locals have the best they're in the best position to control their own business. And so the more local control you can have, the better. But that's why we have higher governments. That's why we have state governments that oversee city governments. So if the city government runs amok – the state can come in. Same thing. States have their own rules. They should make most of the laws that govern their citizens. The federal government has the Constitution that it, you know, makes sure the states abides by, right? So they, if our state's doing something that's unconstitutional, the feds come in, shut it down so you can't do that. But it's not the federal government's position to run our lives. And it really shouldn't be the state government who do, you know, the day-to-day kind of inner workings, what we do. But that's not what we see. We see the state government, you know, come into our lives very much so. And we see the federal government come into our lives very much
so. Constantly. Yeah.
So.
Well, Jackson, I think I heard the figure $2 billion is what Jackson needs to revamp its water. I mean, I don't know. Maybe with all of the money flowing out of D.C., out of the $1.9 can Jackson not get $2 billion? I mean, that's crumbs off that bill. So maybe they can find something. But bottom line is Jacksonians have to hold their political class accountable, and they refuse to do that. They just continue to elect the same kind of people.
Yeah, so that's right.
They're getting what they get. All right, one last break. We'll come back, finish up on whatever other bills are important. Y'all need to listen and call these senators and stuff. There's some bad things that we could avoid here with just a few phone calls. So 601-463-8741. Jot that down. Keep it handy by your desk. And when you hear these bills come out, give them a call. We'll be right back.
If you're considering renovations, remodels, or roofing, call on Tri-County Restoration. Do you have an insurance claim? We work with all insurance companies. Tri-County offers kitchen and bath remodels, wood floor refinishing, patio and sunroom additions, and is a GAF-certified roofing contractor. And Tri-County Restoration can handle new construction for that home you've always dreamed of. Call Tri-County Restoration, 601-856-2530, or visit our website, tcr.ms. That's tcr.ms.
All right, final segment here. Stephen Utroska from Americans for Prosperity. What else is going on? We got about 5 more minutes.
Yeah, well, let's talk about a couple of good bills again. There's a few bills that have actually already passed both chambers, and they're headed to the governor that we were supporting. One of them was a Sudafedrin without a prescription bill. So if you have seasonal allergies and would like to use Sudafed for that, once the governor signs it, you'll be able to get that behind the counter. So you have to go up and ask the pharmacist for it, and they'll look at your driver's license, write down your license number to make sure you're not buying a ton of it, but no more prescriptions. So I've actually been fighting for that one for a few years now because I'm a seasonal allergy guy, and Sudafed's great for me.
Turned into my Wednesday show. I'm going to get you off that Sudafed, too. I'll get rid of those allergies. Go ahead.
Yeah. So that's headed to the governor. Another one that's a telemedicine bill, basically. During COVID, the governor put out an executive order to kind of loosen some of the restrictions on telemedicine in Mississippi. So we basically made those into law now, so that those will stay and not, just under this coronavirus thing. Once we get past this, it will stay in law. So that's already been passed by both houses or both chambers and headed to the governor for signature. And then we've got about 30 other bills that we're still tracking that have made it through both chambers, but when they, if they change the bill, if they amend the bill after it's passed one chamber and then, goes to the next chamber, what they do is they can either concur with it, so the opposite chamber who created the bill, if it's been amended after it passes there, they can say, yeah, we're good with those changes, we'll take it. Or they go to conference, and if they go to conference, then they have the bills and they'll try to work out the differences and send them back out. But there's a lot of good bills out there. There's actually very few bills that we're opposing right now. A lot of good bills still out there that we're supporting. Everything from, alcohol freedom to a couple of bills.
And when you say alcohol freedom, you're talking about you can order it, you can have it delivered.
I've termed it Uber Drinks Bill. Yeah. So that you can have it delivered, the Department of Revenue warehouse bill to try to privatize that so the state's not in the warehouse business and distributor business for alcohol. There's some bills.
How many states do that? Do you know? Because I don't think most people in Mississippi, if you've only been here, you don't understand we're, not every state controls all of their alcohol. Louisiana, you distribute.
Alabama doesn't.
Can be very free market, and it can be cheaper. You have better availability of stuff, more selection. There's all kinds of good.
Yeah,
reasons.
We've already had several big distributors from other states come into Mississippi and say, hey, if this passes, we're interested in putting in millions of dollars of infrastructure to build warehouses, build buildings all over the state to make it more efficient. So I think it's a great bill. There's a couple other microbrewery bill, but there's several alcohol bills. There's some universal licensing bills to help people get licenses if they move into Mississippi. They have professional licenses in other states, teacher, engineer, whatever it is. Easier process to get a reciprocal license here in Mississippi if you become a resident.
Which would create a ton of jobs and encourage migration into the state.
Yep. So there's plenty of things we're still looking at. We've got a lot of good bills out there. Hopefully we'll pass. But again, I know you've been giving the number out, I've been giving it out. But again, if anybody's listening and you hear some of the bills that we're against or for, please call your senator or representative at 601-463-8741. That's 601-463-8741. Call up there, ask for your legislator, ask to leave them a message, and the nice lady that answers the phone at the switchboard will record your message and leave that on their desk.
Is there a place that you guys offer where someone can look and just go to your site every week and see what bills you're supporting and opposing and know what to call and what to call the bills and the numbers and all that stuff?
Yeah, we do. So we have our Facebook page. It's Americans for Prosperity-Mississippi, or you can do @AFPMS. Find us there. I do a video every Friday About a 5-minute video where I run through some of the good, the bad, and the ugly of Bills. So follow us on Facebook, watch for those videos. We put out a ton of graphics about good Bills, bad Bills, things like that. That's easiest way to find us. But look, if anybody ever comes up to the Capitol, if you want to come up to the Capitol, I'm up there just about every day when we're in session. I'd be glad to show anybody around the Capitol and kind of show you some of the inner workings of it. We do it all the time. We have a big Capitol Day we do every year. We had about 50 people come this year. We you know, try to introduce them to their legislators if they don't know them. I work with just about every one of them up there. And so if you want to do that, again, find us on our Facebook page, send us a message on that, say, hey, I'm coming up here this day. Are you going to be there? And it, as long as the legislature's in session that day, I'll be there and be glad to show anybody around.
Okay. All right. Well, and again, as we've talked about many times with Stephen, and it's been something I've kind of woken up to, learned, 10 of you out there making a call makes a difference. I do not call Roger Wicker, Cindy Hyde-Smith. I do not email them anymore to get a canned response. But here locally, very small groups of people can mobilize. Get your friends, get your family. If you're passionate, if you got a family that's suffering from conditions that would be addressed with medical marijuana, you need to put this out on your Facebook group and make sure you are energized into changing people's minds and getting 65 through the way it was intended. I mean, and you can make that difference. So, again, 601-463-8749. That's the switchboard line. Anything else? We got about 20 seconds?
Yeah, it was 8741.
Oh, I'm sorry.
601-463-8741. Call that number and ask for your legislator. Leave them a message.
Okay. And your Facebook page is Americans for Prosperity?
-Mississippi.
Is it AFP or?
Yeah, Americans for Prosperity spelled out -Mississippi.
Okay. All right. Good deal. We're talking to Stephen Utrosco. We'll be back next Thursday. We'll continue to track these, the good, the bad, and the ugly at the legislature. See you tomorrow. Bye-bye.
No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how hard you try.